My name is Andrea, and I am a senior consultant at Research Consulting. We are a specialist consultancy that works across the research landscape, supporting research institutions, funders, government bodies, and publishers. I am here to talk to you as part of the ALPSP Careers Hub series, and I'll be providing an overview of the role publishers can play in the evolving research data landscape. I should note at this point that I won't be covering the perspectives of researchers and research performing organizations in detail as part of my discussion, but I will focus mainly on what publishers can do with regard to research data and what is the rationale for action. I'll start by providing a definition of research data, because this is often what leads to confusion. Research data is essentially anything that a researcher creates, gathers, processes, or otherwise uses to develop their findings. What's particularly interesting about research data is that this term is interpreted slightly differently across disciplines, including in cases where data may be digital, physical, or performative in nature. To give you some examples, research data includes born digital items such as spreadsheets, photos, videos, or computer code. Then digitized materials are also research data. For example, old music or photos in obsolete media that have been archived on a computer, scanned sheet music, or notes from a physical notebook that have been saved digitally at a later stage. But there are also forms of research data that are physical and may not be directly saved on computers. Say, for example, an iScore sample or a performance such as music and dance. Information about these things can indeed be saved, for example, a chemical analysis of the iScore or a video recording of the dance performance. But the physical material in the former case and the experience of the audience in the latter may only be saved indirectly. So I think the main point here is that research data is extremely diverse. It could be in virtually any form imaginable. But the good news from a publisher's perspective is that typically you'd be interested only in the data that underpins a publication, while all other forms of information gathered as part of a research project are more likely to fall within the remit of research performing organizations. Now, what I've been saying so far assumes that managing and sharing research data is an important activity, which is correct, but I would like to talk you through some specific reason why this is the case. Overall, I would say that there are several pressures for data management and sharing, most of which have a link with publishing. I'll start by mentioning the fact that funder expectations around data sharing are increasing, for example, considering the inclusion of a data availability statement as a minimum requirement. Research data is also starting to take a more prominent role in research and researcher assessment in recognition of its role in good research practice, research integrity, and research reproducibility. And in this context, some publishers are establishing discipline or field-specific research data policies, which is something I'll pick up in a few minutes. There are also some principles that have gained significant traction over the past few years, which I think are worth mentioning. First of all, it is broadly agreed that data should be as open as possible and as closed as necessary. And this means that in all cases where data sharing is not inappropriate due to ethical, commercial, or other reasons, then research data should be shared. The other consideration I wanted to share is the FAIR principles, where FAIR is an acronym standing for findable, accessible, interoperable, and reusable. What this means exactly requires a completely separate conversation, but I would highlight that the FAIR principles are about how and where data is shared, with a significant focus on research infrastructures and their capabilities. Now, I think it's important to acknowledge that publishers, research performing organizations, funders, and other research stakeholders are not directly responsible for managing, documenting, and sharing data. It is obviously researchers who are closest to their data, and they are uniquely placed to work with it. What all the other stakeholders can do, and this includes publishers, is foster an environment where research data sharing is enabled and valued through support mechanisms, guidance, and where appropriate, rewards. Clearly, what I've been saying so far glosses over inequalities in data education and literacy and uneven access to research data across the world, which are very important considerations, but would require a much more detailed and nuanced discussion. So what I'd suggest is that publishers should come to grips with the basics of research data sharing as a starting point, and then explore the impact of equality, diversity, and inclusion prior to operationalizing their chosen strategies in this area. So I feel it's now time to think about research data in the context of a research article in a much more practical way. I'd like you to think of a research article as a house, and to consider the famous fable of the three little pigs who build their houses of different materials. As the story goes, a big bad wolf blows down the first two houses, made of straw and sticks respectively, but is unable to destroy the third pig's house, which is made of bricks. So let's try to consider a parallel in academic publishing. For our own story, the wolf trying to destroy the three little houses is a very meticulous reader who is really keen to fully understand where published findings come from. So they are trying to break down and assess the narrative and evidence in the article to make sure they fully understand and trust it. We can imagine the straw house as an article that has passed peer review and has been published, but comes with no additional materials. For example, if our reader wanted to validate the findings published, reuse some of the underlying data, or check some published images independently, they simply couldn't. This is not to mean that the article is incorrect or based on poor research, of course, but just that from a reader's perspective, you need to take the work of the research team and the peer review at face value. So the reason why I'm framing this as a straw house is that an article published in this way can't withstand a lot of scrutiny, simply because there isn't very much for the reader to check. So again, this doesn't mean that the research is incorrect, but only that it can't be examined in detail from the outside. And something quite important to consider is also that what I'm describing isn't only applicable to quantitative data, for example, a table, but also to things like thematic coding or annotated text or videos that could be shared alongside an article. Now, if the article was published, for example, with some data behind the findings and figures, as a reader, you'd have quite a lot more information to assess and reuse the published work. That's still not enough to be able to tell if the research team has reported some of their overall findings selectively, or if things like the detailed methodology or research code are correct. But this does give you what you need to independently verify the published work, at least to an extent. But if we move forward to the strong brick house, the one that the wolf can't blow down, that's where things really change. What we would consider as the bricks of this house varies widely by discipline and by field, so do bear with me as I oversimplify things. But broadly speaking, I'd consider this scenario as a published article where the research team has also shared their raw data, a clear and complete methodology, any relevant computer code, and potentially even more. So why is this the strongest house? Simply because a wolf-turned reader can be as satisfied as possible that the findings reported are correct and can be trusted. Does this mean that every reader will take advantage of this opportunity to validate the published research? That's clearly unlikely, but the point is that those who do wish to see the full evidence have the opportunity to do so. And just to know, these principles don't only apply to articles, but also to other types of publications, such as preprints or long-form outputs, such as books. In practice, it's all about how much of the original evidence is shared alongside the research output to enhance the reader's ability to assess it and build on it. So, as you have probably guessed, these scenarios have different implications for publishers, particularly in terms of support provided to authors, guidance provided to peer reviewers, and connectivity with other digital infrastructures. In the case of the straw house, I would argue that this is business as usual for many journals, meaning that author guidelines cover the features of the submission and the journal scope, but don't provide particular guidance on data sharing, code sharing, or similar considerations. Now, what several journals are starting to consider is the stick house level, where guidance is provided around data deposit, data availability statements, and data citation. And in addition to that, there may be additional guidance for peer reviewers, as well as some further information for readers on a journal's position with regard to data sharing. And don't get me wrong, calling this approach stick house is not to say it's not good enough, but only to frame it in a continuum of policy positions that journals can take. And the final approach we're considering is, of course, the brick house, where in addition to everything we've just covered, would also include things such as allowing additional space or words for an extended or more detailed methodology, some guidance on code sharing, and potentially formal data and code peer review. What I'd like to specify is that all these different policies, guidelines and support mechanisms can be mixed and matched in lots of different ways. So I am just providing high-level examples that may or may not apply to a specific journal or might require an extent of adaptation to be relevant. And a helpful way of looking at possible positions that a journal can take with regard to research data has been developed by the Data Policy Standardization and Implementation Interest Group of the Research Data Alliance. Their thinking was that an increase in data-related policies had the potential to confuse researchers and support staff due to too many or perhaps conflicting policy requirements. So they analyzed a set of features of journal research data policies and arranged these in 6 policy types or tiers that journals and publishers can adapt to their target audience. When a publisher is considering what facets of data sharing they might wish to include as part of the policy, it's really important to try to assess what resources would be needed to fully operationalize a given requirement. For example, if a journal were to mandate the inclusion of data availability statements in all manuscripts, what mix of people, communications, and technology would enable this? And this is a mix of resources already available, or would it need to be secured either internally or externally to the organization? The choice of higher tier policies, meaning those with more requirements around data sharing, can bring several benefits for readers and users and also increase the reusability of research data and the visibility of the article. At the same time, the more the requirements, the higher will be the digital infrastructure needs and costs, operational complexity, and efforts required from authors, editors, and reviewers. So going back to the fable and our three houses, we can appreciate how building the brick one is not a walk in the park and should be approached with an understanding of the efforts needed. From an organizational perspective, the implementation of data sharing policies does require a joined up approach across various functions, from editorial to production to digital to communications. And at the same time, journals do need some technical checks to make sure that genuine data sharing is taking place and that submitting authors are not just dumping research data that cannot be understood or reused by third parties. So overall, it's a matter of trade-offs, meaning that publishers should design data sharing policies that are a good fit to themselves as an organization, as well as to the discipline or disciplines that each of their journals support. And to give you an example, it's quite common for a publishing house to have a range of more or less stringent data sharing policies that their individual journals can pick from in line with disciplinary practices and expectations. And at this point, I think it's time to add a bit of detail around the technical implications of operationalizing data-related policies, just to raise awareness of digital infrastructures and steps in the publishing process that would be affected. I would argue that the main consideration is that any research data shared should ideally be assigned a persistent identifier, usually in the form of a DOI. This is not something that publishers would typically do themselves, but they would indeed need to check that this is present and included as part of data citations or a data availability statement. The linking of articles and underpinning data is really important. And publishers can make this explicit by registering data references with Crossref. And as part of data-related efforts, publishers can also ensure that data is licensed appropriately, regardless of where this has been deposited, to ensure that it is accessible and reusable. Today, it is quite common to use Creative Commons licenses for most data, but other options are typically used for research objects such as code or software. And finally, I'd say that publishers should do their utmost to ensure that data availability statements are clear and complete, so the data link to an article is easily found. An easy way of doing so is to provide templates for data availability statements, as these can really help authors understand the journal's expectations. And in cases where a data availability statement is not published as a dedicated section of the article, but as part of the article's body, publishers would ideally identify and tag this so it is presented as part of the article's metadata. These technical implications are just a starting point, but what I'd like to point out is that publishers should acknowledge that it does take significant time and effort to communicate and operationalize a research data policy, regardless of the strength of its requirements. So from the way I have been talking so far, it may sound like research data sharing in the context of journal publishing is highly developed, and you may wonder if you might be too late to join the discussion. And let me reassure you, the answer is that you are certainly not too late. The research data management and sharing landscape has been moving fairly slowly due to disciplinary variation, the significant burdens placed on researchers and research performing organizations, and the fact that research data hasn't historically been part of research and researcher evaluation processes. In practice, before a researcher gets to the point of sharing the research data alongside the publication, they will need to go through what is referred to as the research data lifecycle. This means the whole process of planning for research data collection and capture, data analysis, documentation, and management, often with support from colleagues or professional services at one's home institution. What I mean here is simply that if sharing and publishing research data were easy, we would already be doing it at scale. I think the rationale and drivers for data sharing alongside published works are certainly there, and they are compelling. But the truth is that the landscape is still evolving and the practice is not yet established in all disciplines. So in a sense, this is good news for every publisher and journal looking to contribute to this discussion and will even help shape the future of research data sharing policies and practices. And I have one last thing I want to cover, which is what I didn't cover today. I think this is really important because research data sharing is a very multifaceted and diverse world with lots of stakeholders, disciplinary needs and trends, and ways of doing things. So if you do wish to dig further into research data sharing, I would recommend that you look into a few other aspects that I have only mentioned in passing. I'm talking about the role of research performing organizations, considerations around equality, diversity and inclusions, issues around software and interoperability, including links between this and research integrity and reproducibility, then challenges around data formats and data preservation, and the perspective of researchers, meaning the impact of data sharing on their workloads, as well as their motivations and barriers when sharing data. To make a long story short, I just want to say that there is a lot more to data sharing than I talked about today. So I would like to make sure that the oversimplifications I have made in the interest of time don't lead anyone to thinking that data sharing is as simple as putting a policy and some workflows in place. So I hope that's given you a flavor of the ways that publishers can support research data sharing in the context of a shifting and highly diverse scholarly landscape, and also of the reasons why this is becoming increasingly important. And this brings us to the end. So I would like to say thank you for listening, and please do check out some of the videos and podcasts on the ALPSP Careers Hub.